Hi, this is Mitchell Field, host of The Field Trip right here on Radio Sausalito. My show today is the second part of my interview with Jeff Burkhart, also known as The Barfly. He's just written a new book called 20 Years Behind Bars, and it's about his experiences bartending. He also writes a column in the Marin Independent Journal every Sunday under the name Barfly. So please enjoy the second part of my interview with The Barfly, Jeff Burkhart.
Now, the other thing about those large liquor stores and true of supermarkets and that thing is that, by and large, they don't store their products very well. I always find it funny that I go to a lot of these upscale grocery stores, and their best wines are always stored standing straight up so that the corks dry out and the wine spoils. Or they're under lights that light them up so that people can see them, which, of course, is the arch enemy of wine. You don't want to do that either. Or the other one that I always get a kick out of is beer. Now, if you go into any supermarket and you go to the beer cooler, it's lit up like a Thrifty's. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. And the beers are right next to the lights. And all of those beers that are right next to the light are probably skunked. And that's true for sake, too, because sake, of course, is a brewed product and is also light sensitive.
So am I better off to buy a beer in a can?
I think that's true. And if I'm judging your accent correct, you know, Guinness in particular, their pub draft is fantastic. They put a nitrogen widget in it. It's protected from the light in a black can. When you open the can, it injects nitrogen into the beer, which causes it to foam and become much more lively with a lively head.
You know, some of the brew pubs that I go into brew very, very good beer, but they always serve it ice cold. And I can't help thinking that sometimes it would be better if it were room temperature, where you'd be able to taste the ingredients a whole lot better.
Oh, absolutely. That goes for other products as well. I mean, the benefit of cold, in many cases, is a masking agent. For instance, with wine, or even with alcohol. For instance, the ultra-cold martini that you shake until little ice crystals form. Well, the ice mutes your ability to taste. So the more inferior product you have, the colder you want to serve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, you know, well, for some reason, champagne has kind of transcended that and is served ice cold, which is kind of a weird anomaly. But white wine, even red wine, the colder it is, the less you're going to be able to taste of it. And that's true of beer, too. And so beer, if you're actually a connoisseur of beer, ale, of course, is not supposed to be served cold at all.
Right.
It's supposed to be served, you know, cellar temperature. And only lagers and things of that nature are supposed to be served cold, and even then they're not supposed to be served cold, they're just stored cold. So, you know, it does mute the flavors considerably.
Let me ask you this. What is vermouth? I've read that it's an aromatized wine, and what does that mean?
Well, that's true. There's a difference between aromatized wine and fortified wine. A fortified wine would be something like port, where they actually add distilled alcohol to it. Aromatized wine, in general, means that it's had some sort of aromatics infused into it. And in fact, vermouths nowadays can actually have a little bit of distilled alcohol added to it, but at a very small percentage. A fortified wine, a spirit, will actually create a situation which preserves the wine because it kills the bacteria in the wine and allows it to age or stay on the shelf a lot longer. So vermouth is actually just wine that has herbs in it. So a lot of people, you know, when they have vermouth at home, they don't refrigerate it. And all vermouth should be refrigerated, and it should be treated like regular wine. You wouldn't think of drinking a red wine that you've had sitting around the house for 4 or 5 months. It'd be terrible. And that's the same with vermouth. Good vermouth, you should use quite quickly, and whatever you don't use, you should refrigerate in a sealed container. So it's a pretty volatile product. So a lot of people, when they make martinis or Manhattans, they're using vermouth that has become oxidized. And since vermouth already has kind of an oxidized flavor, they're not really sure of how bad it's gone. The best tasting sweet vermouth, of course, is Carpano, which is their Antica formula. And they make another one called Punta Mes, which is actually quite good, too. And there's a few Spanish reds out there that you can find, and some Biancos, which are white vermouths. But dry vermouth has a very pronounced vegetal flavor and an oxidized flavor that, if you taste it straight, it doesn't really taste that good. It works if you make like a gin martini, where the qualities of the juniper mix with the vegetalness of the vermouth, and you create a different flavor profile in general. But you don't want to use dry vermouth in large amounts unless you really like that flavor in your vodka. And you certainly don't want to do it if you're using premium vodka, because you're going to be flavoring your $30 a bottle premium vodka with a $4 a bottle product. And that just doesn't make good sense.
How much vermouth would you use?
And a martini, it's very little. It's less than an eighth of a teaspoon. So it's a very small amount. And again, you would want to use fresh vermouth that you've had. And even Bianco vermouth, remember the original martini was made with sweet vermouth and not dry vermouth. And it wasn't until things started leaning towards this drier flavoring that they started using dry vermouth. So a little bit goes a very long way. It's a very pronounced flavor, and if you introduce it into a neutral medium, i.e. vodka, it's going to really, really affect the flavor. I mean, essentially all you'll taste is the vermouth. So you should pick your vermouth very carefully, and certainly if you're going to make a martini with vermouth, it's much more important to have a better vermouth than it is to have a better vodka. When you make Manhattans, the proportions become much higher. So it's not unusual to make a Manhattan with a third of the drink being vermouth. When I make a Manhattan at home for myself, I use 40% sweet vermouth, 60% whiskey, and then I actually even add a little bit of water, right, to actually kind of tone down some of the subtleties. And it makes for a very, very delicious drink.
If you're just joining us, my guest on today's field trip is Jeff Burkhart, also known as the Barfly. So, Jeff, what's a fizz, and where did that originate?
There's a couple of different fizzes. So the Ramus fizz is probably the most well-known fizz.
What's meant by muddling a drink?
Muddling is mashing, essentially, sugar or fruit to release its essences. Of course, the mint julep would be probably one of the most famous muddled drinks. And even then, people often mistake muddling with just pulverizing the product into oblivion. And with aromatics, they release their oils very quickly. So if you just take mint leaves and crush them in your hands for just a second, you're going to get more of a result than if you pulverize it into a slimy little paste. There's a famous joke, can your bartender muddle an old-fashioned? Someone at the bar says, nobody can sure screw up a martini.
Is that a pain for a bartender to make if you're busy?
The short answer is yes.
Well, I'm sure times change and fashions, and probably so do drink preferences. What's trendy now?
Well, Manhattans are big right now. Part of that's probably due to the weather. I mean, we are in the middle of winter here, and the big push, again, like I said, for rye whiskey and things of that nature. Most of the most popular drinks, the margarita, the Manhattan, the martini, the daiquiri, all of those are almost 100 years old or over 100 years old. And the reason for that is they all taste good, and they're easy to make.
Tell me, what is a highball?
A highball is just a liquor and a soda. So a liquor and a mixer, essentially. So, I mean, the original one would be a bourbon and ginger ale would be a classic. And that comes in the standard gin and tonic, rum and coke, vodka, soda glass that every restaurant has. Now,
okay.
The problem is the original highball glasses were shaped differently than the ones that most use today. And so people are not as familiar with that term as it would have been a long time ago. I make the point in the book that, you know, that of all the drinks that Ernest Hemingway drank, and he's most famous for, of course, the daiquiri and the mojito, the one he mentions the most in his book is the highball, which leads you to believe that he just likes something simple.
Let's talk about this etiquette at the bar. Say you go into a bar and it's busy. People are sitting at the bar and you're standing. You want to attract the bartender's attention. I've been told that bartenders see you. They notice you. And the last thing they want is you jumping up and down and waving money. And what's the deal with that? What do you feel as a bartender is the etiquette that is going to get the client the best service?
Well, the obvious thing is that it's our job to serve you, and it's financially beneficial to us to do so. Most bartenders know that, and so they're there to wait on you. So if you are in the periphery of a bartender, they'll spot you, and if they're not sure what you're doing, all you have to do is raise your hand like you're pointing at the ceiling just one time and kind of make eye contact with the bartender, and then just wait your turn. What happens is people start to panic in that instance, and then they do all kinds of things that just cause problems, where they start, like you said, waving money, you know, which is very distracting and quite rude, to be frank. And, you know, the other one would be whistling. You know, I mean, I've seen you, I'll get to you in a second, but I actually, all those other people who are sitting at the bar are also vying for attention. So it's a matter, it's almost like triage. You have to kind of treat the people that need it most first. People will wait patiently in the line at Starbucks for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But at a bar, 30 seconds later, and they're starting to panic a little bit. If you're going to order a drink, it's really pretty simple. You want to order the liquor, how you want it, and what you want it garnished with. That's all the bartender needs to know. He doesn't need to know why you're ordering it, who you are, why you're there, where you're going to go afterwards.
Give me an example.
All of that stuff is really irrelevant. Those are the three things he needs to know.
Give me an example.
If you're going to order a martini, for instance, you would say, I will have a 209 martini up with an olive. Any bartender anywhere will know what that means. If you just say a martini, that means absolutely nothing. If you say Manhattan, that means nothing because you need to know all the identifiers. So just remember, it's just simple as liquor, mixer, and garnish. And that's all they need to know.
So, Jeff, let me ask you this. What's the correct percentage to tip a bartender?
Well, I would say the minimum percentage for good service would be 10%. It used to be that a dollar a drink was kind of the norm. But the problem is that a lot of drinks have gone up precipitously in price. So a dollar now would be less than 10%. And I would suspect that there's not a bartender out there who would really appreciate less than 10% as a tip. Now, having said that, you know, you're obviously free to give as much as you'd like. You know, I've gotten everything from nothing to $100. So, like I said, I'm pretty happy with a dollar drink. If I get bad service, rude or just terrible service, I don't tip anything. You don't go out to get rude service.
Well, my last question is an easy one. What do you like to drink?
One of my favorite drinks is a Hanger One Buddha's Hand a Martini Up, which is a Buddha's Hand is a citron. It's a specific type of a lemon that creates this very perfumey, wonderful, light, refreshing beverage. I'm a big fan of the Rye Manhattan. I told you earlier that I like a little higher percentage of vermouth than I would serve to most people, and I like a splash of water on it. But I enjoy single malt scotches. On my birthday, I actually had a high-end bourbon that I have around my house, and I didn't realize that it had gone up to $2,000 a bottle in price. And I thought, oh my goodness, that was pretty darn good.
If you want to know more about the barfly, Jeff Burkhart, you can go to jeffburkhart.net. You'll find all sorts of information there, including some terrific video cocktail recipes, most of which are less than a minute in length. You can watch them and impress your friends. His publications are available online at Amazon. And Jeff, continued success to you, and thanks for taking us on a field trip today.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It was quite fun.
That's the barfly, Jeff Burkhart, everyone. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, on your computer at radiosausalito.org, or 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week. We'll be right back.